Good evening, everybody. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters, and I've got some wonderful Paradigm Shifters today. I have with me Judith Shervin and Jim, now I'm going to pronounce your name just right, Snikowski.
Perfection.
And these two put their heads and their hearts together, and they brought forward a book called The Heart of Marketing. And I'll tell you what, it is really on target with what a lot of us are trying to understand these days. They're talking about soft sell marketing. They're talking about the experiences that led them from being therapists for 17 years into the world of marketing and some of the face plants, as my sister would say, that they've experienced on their route to being successful in marketing. So I'm very excited to have you on the air. Welcome to Paradigm Shifters, you two Paradigm Shifters.
Thank you, Veronica, and I love the title of your show, Paradigm Shifters.
And aren't you glad to be one?
Yes. It all depends on what night we're talking about.
Well, we were talking on the last show about identity, how our identity is hooked in a certain way of being, and we're trying to release that, too. That's part of the shift, isn't it?
Exactly.
So you don't want to go back in time to what was more secure, probably.
Well, it's interesting you use the word identity. Let me use that to segue into one of the aspects of the book that of our book, The Heart of Marketing, that we talk about, and that is the word identification. A lot of people think that a sale, when you go out and you buy something, mm-hmm. that a sale is about the numbers, about the guarantee, about the return policy, about the delivery policy, and all of that's important.
Mm-hmm.
But the sale is actually made emotionally. That's when the sale happens, because you identify with either the person doing the selling, which is very often the case, or you identify with whatever solution is being offered to you. And by identification, what I mean is that you actually sense the oneness between you and either the seller or the product that the seller is offering, which pertains to whatever it is you need. If that identification isn't made, then a sale might be made, but it will not be fruitful for either side because there won't be a return sale. And also, it won't actually often be made because there is no real connection, and it's in the connection that most of the commerce takes place.
So is it an empathetic kind of thing, or is it
yeah.
more functional and practical than that?
Well, it really is what we're encouraging everyone to move into is a more empathetic, caring, heart-based connection rather than just the technical how-to. Certainly, when people are the customer and they need help, you go into a hardware store, you certainly do need some how-to help
mm-hmm.
in terms of getting the right color of paint.
The
or
nuts
the right
and bolts, yeah.
Nuts and bolts or a wrench, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a huge difference between going into a hardware store, and I sort of like hardware stores, so I remember going into a hardware store when I was a kid. I was a teenager. My mother had sent me to get something or other, and I was ignored because I was maybe, 16. I could drive. I remember that. But I was ignored, and all these men with their paint caps on were getting all this attention, and I finally had to muster up my courage and say, I'm here to find some nails, and I need to find 2-inch nails, and I need your help. And it was as if I had disturbed the peace in the hardware store, And they managed to help me, but you could see they were uncomfortable. They didn't really like dealing with a 16-year-old girl, and I didn't have a painter's cap on. I didn't look the part. And I also remember all very well. Jim and I lived in a little town in upstate New York for 7 years, and there was a wonderful old-fashioned hardware store, and it was a mom-and-pop store, and they were friendly and warm and went out of their way to help and answer questions, and it was night and day.
That really makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Well, I want to bring us back to, I really have enjoyed as much of your book as I've read, which hasn't been the total thing, because I had a little calamitous event here. But one of the things that you mention is that selling, this is all about commerce, I told everybody, really about more of a conscious commerce.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that you mention about selling is that selling is actually a spiritual art. So you want to elaborate on that?
Sure, we'd love to. Think about it this way, Veronica, and everyone who's listening. First of all, I'm going to ask you a few questions to set a context, and that is, do you believe, you, Veronica, do you believe that on this planet we are all interconnected?
Oh, you bet.
And I knew you would. Okay. Now, do you believe as a result of that interconnection that we're all interdependent?
Yes.
Now, you put that context and you think about someone who needs, who has a problem they can't solve.
Mm-hmm.
They have to go out into the marketplace to find the solution. And by doing so, because he or she can't find the solution on his or her own, they go out into the marketplace and look for someone who has the answer, which by default makes the person doing the seeking not a second-class citizen in a severe sense, but someone who is in a vulnerable position, because I need you to help me because I can't do it myself.
Right.
Now, that person is going out into the marketplace and looking for the solution, and you have a solution. Veronica, you have a solution that you know works and that has worked. You can demonstrate that it works. You have testimonials from previous people that you work with that demonstrate that work and testify that it works. From our perspective, because we're all interconnected and we're all interdependent, we need each other, and that we co-create this experience that we live in together, you have a financial, certainly, an ethical, and from our perspective, a moral responsibility to market your product or service, whatever it is you're marketing, because we all need each other, and you have a solution, and I have a need.
Mm. And that essentially can be passed on as well.
Say it again?
That essentially can be passed on as well, which
absolutely
sends a ripple through the collective, right?
Absolutely ripples through the collective.
Yeah,
and then
right.
There's a marketing side. Now, I want to break this down a little more specifically. The marketing, to make it defined in a simple way, marketing is when you let me know you're out there with some kind of product in the event that I may have a need for it, or some kind of solution.
Right.
But then I come to you, and I come to your brick-and-mortar store on a street corner somewhere,
mm-hmm.
or I come to your virtual store, or I come to your radio show, because this is no different than a product than anything else. It's a solution for the people who want to hear the kinds of things you talked about.
That's right.
And so what happens is we come to you. It is your moral obligation to take us through your selling process to tell us as best as you can how what you have will not only service us, but will give us what we want and give us the picture of what we will look like once we apply what it is you're giving and what it is you're offering, the solutions you're offering.
Mm-hmm.
That's called, traditionally called, selling. That too is a spiritual service when you understand what you're doing. And then from my side of it, when I buy your solution, and let's say it's some significant need I have, and I pick you out of a marketplace of possible vendors who are offering a solution that's similar, and I choose you, and I take it into my life, I integrate it, I make it a part of me, so that if you and I never speak again, you will always be a part of my life in some way or another.
Yeah, I love that. That's great.
That not only, Veronica, makes the sale spiritual, it makes it sacred.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
And that's why we say selling is spiritual service.
I love that. So let's tell everybody about how you two got going as marketers, because I know you started off doing soft sell.
Well, Veronica and everybody listening, this is certainly an instance where Jim and I feel like we have been guided to do what we're doing, because we never consciously set out to do this. So I want to preface what I'm about to say by illuminating that part of it. Veronica, as you said, we were psychotherapists for 17 years, and when we came online to begin learning about doing courses, doing teleseminars, really doing seminars by phone,
about your therapy, you mean?
Well, we took a course in how to do teleseminars, meaning how to do seminars by phone, little knowing that we were getting involved in the internet and marketing and selling, we just thought we were learning a different way of doing seminars. Well, that was not the case.
Judith, are you a techie wizard?
No. Oh, I am just the opposite. I am a complete tech phobe. A recovering tech phobe.
A recovering tech phobe. You're an adventuress, girl.
Well, truly, Veronica, I have found these last 4.5 years, as we got involved in all of this, to be the deepest therapy. I call it spiritual therapy. I've been in tons of other therapy of my own, and certainly was a therapist for many long years. But this being, having to learn technology and having to challenge myself these ways has been the deepest therapy I've ever been involved with in my life.
Great.
So that's just an aside in this. But we got involved making products about romance and the promise of conflict and smart dating, and little by little realized we needed to learn about copywriting from the heart, because all the copywriting was hard sell. And we were told, you know, you guys write great sales copy. It's so soft and heartfelt. You should teach it. So we did, because we were hearing at conferences that so many service providers like yourself, other spiritual counselors, healers, coaches, just like Jim and me, couldn't use the hard sell, didn't know how to market, felt really allergic to selling, and we were starting to get a handle on it. So we started teaching our Soft Topic Copywriting Secrets course, and then gave our first conference a year and a half ago called Bridging Heart and Marketing. And I want everybody listening to hear that we thought we were giving a conference about how to help service providers, coaches, healers, spiritual counselors, market online. When we gave the keynote, Selling is Spiritual Service, we had so many people come up to us afterwards in tears saying, you changed my life.
Wow.
You gave me an image of the value that I have. And one woman said, I raised my fee 3 times listening to you because I saw how I was so underrating the value of what I provide. And she was crying, smiling and crying. So long story short, we come to... Now we're giving our third conference this coming October, Bridging Heart and Marketing 3, Extend the Prayer is the title of this one. But in the interim, we have written our book, The Heart of Marketing, Love Your Customers, and They Will Love You Back. And as I said, we feel guided to do this. We never consciously set out to do it. It has been a fascinating and continues to be a fascinating experience. And here we are. We've met you.
Which is great. I want to jump back into your, I mean, I'm enjoying this, believe me, and learning a lot. But I want to go back into a concept I read in the book. I don't know if I've got the story quite right, but there was this fellow who's a very, very tough businessman. And he succeeded in dominating, I guess, his field and knocking people around, but getting, not physically, but getting to the higher level of profit. And you mentioned something that I thought was really pithy, which was, of course, the whole book is, but anyway, this part was integrity. He felt like he was in integrity because his bottom line was profit. So there was a jump shift there going from his approach to business and what you're talking about, isn't there?
Well, there are two distinctly different categories. And what we mentioned about this guy, and he is last we heard, his company grosses $20 million a year. So that's not a huge company, but it's substantial when you think that it was essentially begun in his bedroom on a computer. So he's one of the internet marketing entrepreneur successes financially. But his whole understanding of what business is profit. Business equals profit. And as a result, was he in integrity making all that money? Yes, he was, if you accept that his presupposition that business equals profit was an acceptable presupposition, then he is unidimensionally, he's one-dimensionally integrous or integrated with what he does. But as soon as you add the dimension of the impact of what he is doing on the people who are buying his product, mostly men, and the impact that those men who buy his product, which is dating advice, will have on the women and how they treat the women, then the whole idea of his profit, which is considerable in quantity, the quality of his profit begins to turn really ugly.
So tell people what was his subject?
He was teaching men who had difficulty with women how to have success with women. And basically, what he was teaching them was how to, one technique, I'll just use one to give you an example, and that is you walk up to a woman and you engage her in a conversation. And if you think about this really carefully, there's a lot of holes in this, but if you're a man who has trouble with women and you're looking for some solution, the holes won't be obvious. But nevertheless, you go up to a woman.
At a party or a bar. I mean, it has to be a public gathering.
Mm-hmm.
And you're really friendly and you're warm and you're engaging and she's very pleased to be talking to you. And you talk with her for a few minutes. Perhaps you even buy her a drink. And then suddenly you walk away. You don't say anything. You just walk away and you go talk to a guy, whether it's a friend of yours or just somebody else. And you make sure that you're in eye shot so that she can see you, and you're over there talking to your guy friend. And you stay away long enough to make sure that she's been chewing on it really hard, that did she do something wrong? What happened? Oh, she's so insecure now. She's really scared. She's anxious. She's worried. And then you return, and she'll eat out of your hand.
Oh, my gosh.
Exactly.
It's like fishing.
Well, fishing with really lethal hooks.
Right. Incredible.
You know,
mm-hmm.
So this is what he's offering. He's offering other things, but this is his primary product. So now we say, is he integrated? Does he deal with integrity?
Right.
If you accept that business equals money strictly, and he is making a huge product, then within that one dimension, he's operating in integrity, but it is a highly constricted integrity. It is completely conceptual. There's no feeling involved in it. And as soon as you introduce the consequence of what he may be doing in terms of those men and those women and whomever thereafter that man and woman connect with, then we have to say that he is way out of integrity. But from his perspective, he'll just say, never was my intention. So what we want to do is broaden the idea of exactly what integrity means in the commercial marketplace to include the impact of your products and wares on those who buy from you.
Yeah, because it's really wonderful to think that your impact can actually, I always go back into the collective, it can actually send waves of consciousness through the collective, and his would do the reverse, but we're used to that, aren't we?
Yes.
Yeah, well, his will send waves through the collective. It's not the kind of wave you want.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm not laughing at it. I'm just going, how typical that is of certain business practices, though.
Yes.
Hey? As long as you can do it and get away with it, it's fine, right?
And really, the people have so little awareness of their impact on the collective that I don't even think they feel a shred of guilt or any kind of conscience about it.
Veronica, I'd like to bring in an image here that I think is apt for what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And the image is the Lone Ranger. Now, for anyone who's old enough to remember the Lone Ranger series on television.
Oh, I sure remember them.
and I'm sure many people, you know, many of your listeners do as well. I mean, you have to be really young not to remember it, but there they were. The Lone Ranger and his horse, Silver, and Tonto, his Indian pal, and his horse, Scout, that was the total community within which the Lone Ranger lived. And what he would do is he would come into a town and clean it up and leave so that the townsfolk would say, who was that masked man? Okay? Now, the point here being is that our culture in the United States, we revere that self-contained, non-needy male who comes in, can come in and take care of things, needs nobody else except except, you know, maybe his Indian partner, Tonto, needs nothing and is totally self-contained, except there's a huge flaw. And that is, it's never pointed out in the Lone Ranger series that he desperately needs some town that is in disarray. Because if there's no town in disarray, the Lone Ranger doesn't mean a damn thing.
Oh, that's right.
So the point being...
So he's an archetype of the 50s, isn't he?
He's an archetype, I think, of the male culture that has existed in this country from the beginning. And that's not a criticism. It's just a description. If you go back to the Puritans and those folks that came over, men and women at that time had to be self-reliant just to make the trip across in those flimsy wooden boats.
Right.
And then come over here and land in Massachusetts in the winter and have to set out a colony and all. They had to be really tough people. But then that was taken as an icon for who we all should be. And what I think is happening right now, particularly at the time we're alive where this meltdown economically is happening, is that old, and what's happening around the world in terms of the collective, is that the collective is moving forward and reclaiming its rightful place in the human psyche so that we all know that we need each other, we are interconnected, and we're interdependent.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm... That's really optimistic that it rises to a very conscious level as soon as possible. That would be
as soon as possible.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
ASAP. But
well,
I think I just want to say that story of that fellow. I mean, that's actually really an important thumbnail sketch of what's been going on with the
mm-hmm.
Enrons and various other things. It's just another story of the same thing, isn't it?
Well, it really is, Veronica, and Jim has coined this expression of that traditional marketing, and that's what we're talking about with this example of the guy giving relationship advice to men.
Mm-hmm.
Traditional marketing has been interested only in the customer within the person.
Right, the bottom line.
The bottom
Correct.
Line. Mm-hmm. Soft sell, heart-based marketing, what Jim and I are championing and speaking for and changing global consciousness about commerce. Soft sell heart-based marketing is primarily interested in the person within the customer. And that changes everything.
That's great. That changes everything entirely, yeah. You're not supposed to bring your heart in the old style. I remember that from selling way back. You know, years ago, I was thinking of this as I was reading one section of the book. Years ago, I was selling clothes. I think it was a university job, you know. And
mm-hmm.
I was selling clothes, and I was quite well. I'd say to somebody, you know, this is a nice outfit, kind of, but actually there's a sale in that store over there, and you're going to get more for your money there.
Mm-hmm.
And my manager just...
Flipped
it out. But bottom line, you know what happened? Is people came and sought me out over and
right.
over, and I would sell hundreds of dollars of clothes to those people that I
right.
had thrown out the day before. Not thrown out, I had re-advised, you know?
Right.
But they could trust you.
They did, and I'll tell you what, they came back to me all the time, which shocked the manager.
Well, and
so
the
that's
manager,
kind of what you're saying, right?
Absolutely.
Exactly.
The manager was coming from the old way of looking at it, just bottom line,
mm-hmm.
you already understood that by loving your customers, and you loved them, you wanted their best interest, you sent them across the street to get the sale, they came back because they felt really cared for by you, and therefore they felt safe.
Yeah, and that's true. And I would also tell them if they looked awful in something. No, really, I did, and I really think that we need that. But I'm not going on about me because that was actually quite a few years ago.
But it's not a matter. Please, I would like to just make this a point. It's not going on about you. It's about what you did, and that's precisely what we're talking about. You treat a customer with real respect, and they will come back to you as a long-term customer, even if they don't buy the shirt that they're looking for on a given day.
Yeah, that's right, isn't it? Yeah.
It is.
So this is, go ahead, but you're talking a lot about service, and would that work in service? Well, that is service. Selling.
That is service.
That is service.
Yeah. We actually prefer now, instead of saying customer service, we prefer the phrase customer care.
Mm-hmm.
Because it has more of an emotional feeling. Customer service could simply be, you know, mechanically accepting a refund at the counter and giving you your money back, and not even ever looking up.
Mm-hmm.
That's customer service. But customer care is it has more dimension to it, and that's what the heart of marketing is all about. It is.
I think I'd flip if somebody said, "And how do you really feel about this?" That might be a bit much, right?
Go ahead, Judith.
Veronica, I'm not sure how you mean that.
I was just thinking of somebody returning something at the customer service and them giving you the money, but then saying, "How do you really feel about this?"
Well, actually, we've been asked that, not in those words, but somebody will say, "Well, first of all, the protocol, the policy is, why are you returning it?"
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they want to know why. But the way that's delivered is, "Please tell me what didn't work for you here, or what was it that you didn't like," as opposed to, "Why are you returning this?"
Right.
Because the connection is, I might not say, "How do you feel about this?" But I will find out what it was that didn't work. And that little moment, it's not a big deal. And that's what's so really astonishing about this. It's not a very big deal. But it's a huge deal when the connection is made, even at the refund counter.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I like that a lot, actually. I was trying to be funny, but it wasn't funny, was it? No, because you're right, absolutely right. Because I was just realizing that I shop where I like the people and where they interact.
Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And you are an intuitive, and so you're following your intuition even when you're shopping.
Right. And it's important because as soon as they're really, difficult, then I don't shop there anymore because I can't handle it. That's too much.
Exactly.
We used to go into a particular chain pharmacy, which I won't name.
Okay.
And we would go in there, and I felt, when I walked in that particular store, not necessarily the whole chain of stores, but in that particular location, I would walk in there, and it felt to me like the consciousness was primitive, and it was pressing my face.
Oh, interesting, yes.
I would walk in, and it would be as though I had walked in to a room that was too small for me, and the walls were coming in on me. I rarely went in there.
Wow.
You know, now, I don't know, you know, was I just going through a particularly psychotic period? I don't know. But I couldn't stand the feeling, so I wouldn't go in there. And when we had to go in there, I'd say, "Judith, you got to go in. I can't go in there."
How did you feel in there, Judith?
I felt okay. I didn't have the same experience that Jim did. It was sort of neutral for me, but I'm very task-oriented. So I tend to just go into places and go about my business and I'm okay unless I need help. I really am sensitive to how I'm treated by the staff or, you know, when I'm checking out. But in terms of being in a particular place, I don't have quite the same sensitivity that Jim does. But it has certainly, this whole area of marketing has made me more and more aware of how I am treated and how often the customer care or patient care, because I've been in a couple of medical offices recently where the patient care was horrible.
Yeah, out of there really fast.
Really fast, really fast. I mean, something as simple as no magazines in the waiting room.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just, you know, appalling. So we have really bitten off a major piece of how we all live together, Jim and I have, and we really appreciate you bringing us on to spread this message that it is time. It is really time that not only do we sell and market with greater consciousness and care, but that as the consumer, and just like you said, Veronica, when you don't feel right, you leave and you don't come back.
We want
to encourage all consumerism to become heightened consciousness about how are you treated, and if you're not treated well, go someplace else and vote with your money for being treated well, and speak up. If you're not treated well, speak up, because we wrote our book, The Heart of Marketing, and the subtitle is Love Your Customers and They Will Love You Back. So our book is just as much for customers as it is for the sellers, and we really are committed to helping everyone become much more conscious of how commerce runs. And I would just want to make up a point that we encourage everyone to get our book. It's paperback. It's not expensive. And you can go to theheartofmarketing.com. It's a new book, so we actually have the book launch special gifts that were made available by many, many international marketers. Everything from how to write an ebook to wealth mindset, you name it. There are 62 bonus gifts available there at theheartofmarketing.com when you buy the book through Amazon.
Wonderful. I just want to go back to something Jim said, which was you said it was your psychotic phase or something. But it's really interesting to me that people are trying to learn to trust their own sensitivities as
mm-hmm.
being an alphabet or a language for them to follow in order to empower themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little like you. I feel the ambiance or feel the collective energy in a building. I'm an empath and so on. But I watch you intuitively and I go, yeah, you're an example of how people need to clear up their collective energy in a store too, because it can really hurt other people. You know, it's like being absolutely conscious that we sweep the vibes clean, I think is really important. And
almost
you're lucky
like,
if you don't feel it. Hmm?
It almost like having to go in and smudge the store.
Yeah, and you can do it with violet flames and so on. But I also want to jump from there. I just wanted to feed you back on that because I think that you're not, it's not psychotic, it's real in people.
Oh, when I use psychotic, I guess we're even now. I was trying to make a joke, but it wasn't funny.
Well, it's because I was just teaching people about that before in my previous show, so I want to make sure they get the lesson, you know?
Yeah.
And I also want you to talk about your online classes. You guys moved from doing wonderful relationship things and relationship books into the heart of marketing, and I know you did a lot of, like, teleclasses and so on. How was your evolution into presenting your work in that fashion, being a technical jump?
Before Judith and I ever met, long before, both of us were interested in one form or another of consciousness. Esoteric consciousness, academic consciousness. We were both interested in the idea and the experience of consciousness. When we met, one of the very first things we did was Judith put together a small spiritual discussion group when there were like six or eight people in it and asked me to join, and I did. So we have always been interested. And when we did our relationship work in the area of romance, it was still about the consciousness of a relationship and how two people can make a relationship work depending upon their degree of consciousness. And the name of our first company was called The Magic of Differences. And the Magic of Differences meant that it's in the differences between two people, the negative and the positive, or let me say it the other way, the positive and the negative, that the real possibility for intimacy arises, simply because when I see Judith as not me, and that's not as easy as it sounds. Most people, and I don't say this critically, most people are sufficiently narcissistic that they don't see the other person as a distinct other being. When I see Judith as not me, then one thing happens. First of all, she feels honored and respected and seen. And then I can trust that if she says she loves me, and she's seeing me as not her, she's actually loving the me that I'm presenting to her. And so as a result, that's the only way you can truly believe whether or not you're loved or not in a relationship. Well, then you carry that on into marketing. And marketing, it isn't the same kind of love. It's the love that is expressed by you when you say, I shop where I feel good with the people. That's all we're talking about. But it's a sense of affection, a sense of connection, and we can extend that to a sense of love.
It's also a sense of seeing the other and not just yourself and a projection of self?
Precisely.
Mm.
And seeing the other as an other, not as somebody separate, but as somebody different. Because in esoteric circles, one of the concerns that Judith and I have is the idea of oneness, the yearning for oneness, which I am all in favor of, But it's you. If you go for the oneness before you see the two-ness that's all around you, then we call it premature spirituality.
That's great. I like that.
You are shooting for being a saint before you get to be a human.
Mm.
And a human, if we just look around, I'm seeing Judith sitting over there, and she's female, and I'm male, and she's got a different costume on, and all kinds of things are different, but not separate. She's not. We're not separate in the sense that we are outside the oneness. We're both in the oneness, but we're different inside of it. So when we bring this to marketing, that's where we talk about the fact that any marketing situation is a situation between two people who are partners in the process. And they co-create the process together. And in co-creating, they need each other. So it's not just a product chasing a wallet. It's two people who are actually interacting. And in that interaction, we create humanity. And that's part of what we do and part of how we emerged in doing our teleclasses.
And what it has led to, Veronica, and everyone listening, is that we have started the Soft Sell Marketers Association.
Great.
Because we saw that people like yourself, intuitives, and we have, I think, a couple of intuitives, spiritual counselors, coaches, healers, people involved in caregiving, real, you know, heartfelt, needed support and training in marketing and pricing and getting out there and developing businesses that could you know, bring them good amounts of money where they didn't have to feel guilty or ashamed to be marketing and selling. And so we started the Soft Sell Marketers Association, and it has been very successful, and it is growing. It's fairly new. It's only 6 months old, so we don't quite know where all it's headed. But we
and now is it online?
It is online. It's softsellmarketersassociation.org. And we give a training every week, so we're doing that by phone. And then there are downloadable archive trainings in everything from article writing. You know, online marketing has its own tools and know-how. And we've had to learn it, and so we pass that on in real vivid detail so people know how to do it.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm going to join.
Oh, wonderful. We look forward to you joining.
Yeah, I really look forward to that. So is it fun? I mean, all this online, as opposed to being a therapist, okay, is this fun to do teleseminars and classes online and gather people this way? And
very much.
Yeah, very much, Veronica. And we will look forward to guiding you to do it with your skill and your talent so you can do it too, because it will really be fun to help you do that. And in fact, when you join softsellmarketersassociation.org, one of the bonuses is you get our course, First Step Internet Marketing, at no expense to help
really?
You get started.
Oh, really? That's great.
Yeah.
See, we have gone from one-on-one to one-on-many through the teleseminar process, because now one on one you're getting personal treatment, and then if you sat in an audience where somebody was making a presentation, and that somebody in the audience worked with that somebody on stage worked with somebody in the audience, that would be one on one work with the person chosen out of the audience, but the audience picks it up. By proxy. So going through a teleseminar is easy. A teleseminar allows us to communicate with more people than just one-on-one, and it actually works, and that's the brilliant aspect of it. It actually works, and people are moved and laughing and crying and anger and whatever. We can get it all happening in a teleseminar.
So they feel like you're having a one-on-one with them?
Absolutely. And when you do it well, Judith is becoming a very good internet marketer writer. She produces now two newsletters per day, one for the part of our list that still has to do with the work we did in relationship in our past, and now this work now that is marketing. Mm-hmm. And there is what is known as an email blast. And what that means is if you have the right software, you can send one letter out to a goodly number of people, 10,000 people if you have that many in your community.
Yeah, I have eye contact. It's one of those, isn't it?
Say it again?
Eye contact.
Eye contact is one of those, precisely. We use one called One Shopping Cart. But when you send out that, the software works in such a way that when you, Veronica, get that mail, that piece of mail that Judas is sending out, mm-hmm. it will start by saying, "Hi, Veronica." Because that's how the software is organized to include a first name at the top of the email.
Great.
Well, when it's written well, like Judith is writing it well, we have people writing back from the clear assumption that that particular piece of mail was written exclusively to them.
Hmm.
So that can work. Many people know that it's not. But some people don't, and they write back and say, "Thank you for sending this email," and whatever it is they respond to. And then, of course, people who know that it is part of a blast write back accordingly. But there are ways of touching people very, very sincerely and authentically through the internet that can create a large impact. It's like doing radio. It's like what you do. When you do what you do well, all the people who are listening are hearing you individually and personally.
Right.
They know there's an audience out there, but they're still hearing you personally. And that's when the whole process really works.
Hmm. That's wonderful, isn't it?
It is truly wonderful. I mean, just put, you know, go put yourself in a movie theater with a film you've seen recently that made you cry.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else in the theater's crying too. But you're crying because you are being individually moved, and if somebody took a survey of all the people who were crying in the theater and asked them why they were crying, we might get a whole bunch of different stories, but everyone feels it personally and collectively at the same time.
Hmm. Now, that's true, eh?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, this is really exciting. So you also have, let me see, it's called the Bridge of Marketing, Bridging Heart. And marketing.
Bridging Heart and Marketing.
And that's a transitional state, is it?
Well, that's our conference. We call it Bridging Heart and Marketing, and we're actually going to be opening up registration for it. It's October 9th through 11th in Los Angeles at the Ayers Hotel, and we're just about finalizing the website. And it's a wonderful conference because it's all about marketing. Some of it is about online marketing, and some of it's about offline marketing.
Now, so you guys are going to be there in person for this
one. Yes. Oh, goodness, yes. This is live. This is a live networking event, as well as we will be bringing in 7 guest speakers to cover everything from getting publicity to building your list to getting at the core of your benefits so that you know how to market really from the heart of what your clients or customers are looking for. Most people don't know how to market their benefits. You know, so many people say, well, you know, I'm a chiropractor. Yes, but what's the benefit if somebody comes to see you? Well, I fix them. No, that's not really going to be the benefit. And they don't understand marketing. So that is one of the things that Jim and I are devoted to, bringing in guest speakers, and we also will speak 4 different times. In fact, we're going to be speaking about speaking.
Oh, good.
Is one of our topics. Because we are really committed to helping people like you, Veronica, who have a wonderful talent, a wonderful innate skill. You are so helpful to so many people. But some, you know, like yourself, you want to expand what you do. Just like for Jim and me, we want to expand and reach out and touch more people's lives and help people live a larger expression of who they are. And so we have developed these various ways of doing that. And our conference, Bridging Heart and Marketing 3, Extend the Prayer, in October, is going to be the third time. And we're, you can tell, excited. And
this is the third time you've given this conference, or is this just an extended?
No, we're calling this one Bridging Heart and Marketing 3. And the title of the conference, the name of the overall series is called Bridging Heart Marketing. And this one, the specific name for this one is called Extend the Prayer. Because when you know what you're here to do, and you do what you know you're here to do, what you do is effectively a form of prayer.
Hmm.
And when you do it and do it well, and the benefit that you have, you extend it to those you work with, and they take the benefit that they receive from you and extend it in some perhaps different form to someone else, they are extending the prayer. And that's what the theme of this one is going to be all about. Extend your prayer through the internet and the skills that we will show you how to do.
And offline also. Certainly speaking
right.
and publicity are two of also the offline marketing that we will be helping people learn about at the conference as well. I just want to, since that site is not up yet, anybody who has an interest, be sure to send us an email at judithandjim@judithandjim.com, and you spell out the ands. judithandjim@judithandjim.com. And Jim, the 800 number?
Is 877, actually, Judith. It's 877-810-7653. 877-810-7653. And we'll tell you more about it. And the page that we're making our offer through will be up probably in a couple of weeks, the way we're looking at it. But nevertheless, we can be of assistance otherwise.
If this is about the conference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. And it's going to be in L.A.?
It's in Manhattan Beach, actually. If you know L.A., it's about 8 minutes south of the Los Angeles airport. And, Veronica, it's in this wonderful small boutique hotel. The hotel is only about 5 years old, but it's all they imported a lot of European antiquity, including a huge fireplace. So it's really charming and cozy, and it only has one ballroom. So it's not like going to a conference, you know, at one of those big industrial hotels at the airport.
And I guess people can stay there, right?
Oh, yes.
And we've got a reduced room rate to make sure our people are comfortable there. And there's free breakfast every morning. And
what's the date? What are the dates again?
October 9th, 10th, and 11th.
Okay. I've written that down. I don't know if I can make it, but I really like the idea. It's wonderful.
Good.
And we really employ the idea in our conference that selling is spiritual service. And we get folks who resonate with that. So the community of people that arrive and are there to learn to do it from this particular perspective or learn better to do it from this perspective, create relationships among each other and business relationships among each other that extend well beyond the conference. And from our perspective, the conference is 50% information. And also, Veronica, we're not going to just do information in the sense that somebody stands on the stage and talks to you like you're back in school where you have to sit at a desk. This is going to be interactive. So all of the speakers are going to take part of their 90-minute presentation time to set up what they're talking about, and then they're actually going to engage the audience in the doing of it. So
That's
we have
great.
One guy who's coming in who makes his six-figure yearly income. He makes that money by teaching about and marketing himself through writing articles on the internet, and most of his articles don't extend beyond 400 words.
Wow, so, really?
Precisely. But his articles are all informational. How to do this, how to do that, how to do article marketing.
Hmm.
He's going to present the first part of his presentation. We'll be setting up the idea of article marketing, and by the end of his presentation, those people in the audience who participate
Everybody will participate.
Well, that not everybody necessarily will participate. They have to choose to do so. We're going to give everybody the opportunity to participate, and everybody who does, because, you know, conferences, some people do it and some people don't, that's all.
Mm.
But everyone who participates will actually have an article that they will be able to publish online through a particular online outlet that night at the end of the conference.
Excellent. That's great. Now let me ask you this. Have you sent Obama your book yet?
Boy. All right. This is where your intuitive skills come in.
Ooh.
That was really on.
You juicy babe.
I have had, well, the answer is no, but now we are definitely going to. I have said from the beginning, before the book was, one word was written, that this was going to Obama, and other people have said, this should go to Obama, and we have not. And now that you've said it, now we're going to send it to him.
I think you really have to. It's really important. especially as the systems are kind of collapsing and there's a lot of morphing going on, isn't there?
Right.
And a lot of
rebirth.
Right.
And consciousness is shifting. And I look at Obama in traditional Christianity terms. I think that Obama is like John the Baptist. Obama is the one who's announcing the new way is coming. I'm not sure he's the man, and then whoever's going to follow, whenever that person follows, will be the one who opens up the new vision. I think Obama is just sort of creaking the door open, given how we have all been in this culture for 150 or so years.
But
right, he's trying to deal with the machine. We're going to have to close shortly, so I'd like you to give you some of your contact websites and so on, and the name of your book, and you know, anything that you want to put out there for people to get a hold of you.
We will do that, but first of all, I just want to say thank you for your generosity of making that something that we can't do. Thank you.
Thank you for your Obama comment, because, as I said, you're a juicy babe. Well, we do want to invite everybody to get our book. It is under $15 in the United States, under $15. Including shipping when you get it from Amazon. And the site to go to is theheartofmarketing.com. And as I said, there, once you've got your book, you come back and put in your order number, and then you have access to 62 free, no-cost gift bonuses to you about marketing, about wealth mindset, and so forth. And so that's number one. Get our book, The Heart of Marketing. Love your customers, and they will love you back. And our email address, if you have any questions, is judithandjim@judithandjim.com.
And then judithandjim@judithandjim.com. Then there's also Bridging Heart and Marketing. That's a website that will be up in a couple of weeks. That's for our conferences.
And if you want to ask us questions about the conference, our 877 number is?
877-810-7653. And then the last email, the last website we'll give out is softsellmarketersassociation.org. It's a marketing association, softsellmarketersassociation.org. But the easiest thing to do for more information is call 877-810-7653, and we'll answer any question you might have.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you a question really. No, I forget what it is. Oh, dear. It just slipped out of my head as I went to do it because I was conscious of
the time. Oh, it sounded so juicy, too.
It'll hit me in the night. You know how it goes.
Right.
But I really enjoyed this. I've learned a lot, and I feel quite inspired. It's wonderful. I know what it was is we talked about gifting and how hard it is for some of us to charge what we're worth. And
right.
Jim
yeah.
told me something, Judith, about the history of work.
Yeah, I'll just read then. When I talked with Veronica in preparation for today's show. Historically, men have been the ones since the Industrial Revolution. Farm women understand hard work, but when the world went into an industrial phase, men were understood to be the ones who went out into the world to do the work. And the world was a place of combat and struggle. Then, in the Victorian period, sort of between 1800 and 1900, roughly speaking, it was understood that those men needed a place of comfort and solace. And so they received that comfort and solace, in theory, when they went home and their women provided the comfort and the solace for the returning combat veteran who was coming home from a day of work. And I don't mean combat in terms of war. I mean combat in terms of going out into the workplace. So the man was understood to come home to his castle, and the female was to take care of him. Well, it then, during the Victorian period, came to be known that he did the work, and he was described as having done work during the day. And when he came home, she gifted him with her capacity to create a nest or solace for him. So she was not understood as someone who worked. She was the one who gave gifts. And then it became understood that gifting was something that was not paid for, because the women in the homes were not being paid. Work was something that was being paid for. So people who provided caregiving and service were not expected to be paid for what they did because they weren't doing work. They were doing gifting, and people now who do caregiving and service providing have a hard time charging really what they're worth because we still live in that aura and that idea that someone who cares is just giving gifts, not actually working.
And I loved what you said on the telephone yesterday was that it's deep, deep in the collective psyche.
Correct.
And that
deep.
I just wanted that to be said because so many people have to get over that speed bump of learning to charge. And it really does hold us back sometimes, doesn't it?
And the world needs the caregivers, and I will say this flat out, the world needs the caregivers a lot more than it needs the folks who are doing just dollar-for-dollar transactions.
Yes, and we have to go. We're going to be hooked off stage. So many blessings. Thank you so much. What an illuminating time with you, too. And great. Thank you for your work.
Thank you
very
much, Veronica.
Thank you very much, Veronica.
All right, blessings.